Yaman. Sorry. In honor of the Olympics in Rio, we thought we'd start the morning off with a little island music. And welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great weekend to get some stuff done in and around your house. And we have a star-studded show today, don't we, Tony?
I think we do.
Oh, first of all, good morning.
Well, thank you. By the way, good morning. Right back at you.
Who day? The season started, and you and the old boy were down at the game. But tell me a little bit about who we have coming in today.
Oh, a couple people. It's going to be a star-studded lineup.
I just said that.
Yeah, I know. Joseph Simcox. I'm just following your lead.
Yeah.
Botanical explorer, world-renowned, seed-gatherer kind of guy. Travels all over. Has led a lot of expeditions. Just checking out the world's biodiversity on seed and so forth. So, plant material, that's interesting. And
now, we had a chance to talk to him last year. That's when we were introduced to him when he came by for the first seed swap, right?
Exactly.
Or we talked to him on the phone.
We talked to him on the phone, exactly. Mm-hmm. That was the first Ohio Valley annual seed swap. That's where I first met Joe. So, mm-hmm. Joseph, I don't know which one of the two he goes by. But that was really a great turnout, by the way.
Yes.
And Irina Stoenescu will also be in along with Joe to talk about some things. And she's known as Miss Food. So she's going to talk about uncovering the juicy secrets about how people used to relate to food is one of her main topics.
And her name again is?
Irina Stoenescu. If I'm saying that correctly.
I think you could go on to do the play-by-play at the Olympics now. I have no idea how those guys pronounce
Katie Ledecky, in the pool. Yeah.
And then we also have our old friend Jason from Herman Services coming in today. I can't wait to brag on to him about fixing my water faucet. Remember, I had the faucet outside that was spritzing just a little bit, and he told me to get a pipe wrench and maybe just tighten that nut down just
Ernie,
a little bit.
Oh, Ernie, come on. That's so elementary. That's easy.
Elementary, my dear. Fat
yes.
So
yes. Yeah.
Hey, for me, it was a major accomplishment. Two things were accomplished
that's
there.
That's like remedial
I found
math.
A pipe wrench. That was the first great discovery. I had no idea I had one.
You didn't know they existed, or you didn't know you had one?
No, I didn't know I had one. And then when I found it, my memory cleared the fog for just a moment for me to go, oh, yeah, Jason said take this out, tighten that little nut down, and that would work. Voila.
Oh.
So I can't wait to brag on that.
That's like you just stumbled across something.
Yeah.
Where the old saying, a blind squirrel will find an acorn.
Every once in a while.
Is that what you did?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I did. It was nice.
I'm proud of you, brother.
Now, the second one that I found was in pieces and missing a piece or something. It didn't have the tightening down thing on it. It's only half of a pipe wrench. I have no idea how or why I have that.
So I don't know what that means. Was it cut in half to make it shorter in length, or was it just had one side of the teeth in the jaw?
It only had one side of the teeth
in
the jaw.
What's up with that?
And for some reason or other, I kept it.
That sounds like maybe a makeshift I'll find the other fire tool. Oh, you're going to find something to do with that. You're killing me.
Decoration.
If you say so.
Yeah.
I think you need a little help.
I need a lot of help.
Do you?
Yeah. And I'm not afraid to ask for it every once in a while.
No, you're not.
No.
I know that. Go ahead.
What do you got going on? You and the old boy got a chance to get together and go down to the Bengals game?
We did.
Yeah?
It was a good time. Now, of course, preseason. I just wish that they would just go right into the season or play the starters longer.
I would have liked to have seen the starters play a little longer. I did watch a little bit of it before I turned in last night. After the first, I think there was only one series that the starters played. I would have liked to have seen them at least play two series in that first quarter. But it was also nice to see, I look at that differently. I enjoy watching preseason because I want to see those guys that are busting tail to make the roster spot.
I bet you, I would have to say more than half of the people in the stadium don't even know who the new team members are.
At this point, probably that stadium's full of half people that are just lucky that somebody gave them a ticket and they got a chance to go to the game.
That's what preseason's for, isn't it?
At the party. Was there a lot of tailgating going on?
Lot D, which was the parking lot that we used to have with our tickets, it looks like now they're converting it or constructing it into become a new garage of some sort. I don't know. But I can't really tell. So,
well, I'm looking forward to this season. It's going to be a great time. And, you know.
Do you remember the Big Tuna?
I do.
Bill Purcell?
Uh-huh.
Well, the great teams that he coached and had, he would play his starters for a good, at least a half of a game in preseason.
Yeah.
And by the time the season kicked around, they were in better condition than most other teams and their players. That's why they always started off really well.
Yeah.
Play them. Get conditioned. Be ready.
Yep. We got a lot to play around with today. Several guests coming in and got a lot to talk about, too. We covered a lot of ground last week, and we have more to do so today. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a great show lined up for you again today. A couple of guests coming in, but we have also a lot to cover because here, and I know he cringes when I say this, here we are, second weekend of August. Summer has just absolutely flown by. And how's your lawn looking?
Not bad.
No?
I water, but, you know, we've had plenty of rain, too.
Yeah, we have.
In various areas, various spots. But there's a lot of people who are having some lawn issues, as a matter of fact. So, you know, mow it high, as high as you can. Second, usually that. I'd notch it down from the very tallest setting. But
I do. I do, too. One notch. Down. Now, do you raise that back up when the leaves start to fall, or do you leave it there?
I leave it there. The last time I mow during the season, that's when I notch it down one more notch. And that's it. The last time. But it's looking pretty good.
Yeah.
A lot of people are having some issues. You know, I know that we've been selling a lot of the weed-free zone. You know, Creeping Charlie's still bothering a lot of people. I've seen a lot of crabgrass issues. And at this point in time, you know, it's all about temperature, too, when we talk about spraying your lawn and so forth. And, you know, some brown patch in lawns, a lot of issues, a lot of issues. And next week, as a matter of fact, I think it's next week. I have to look at the date. Mike Clare is going to be joining us.
Okay.
Wait a minute. It's the 27th, so that's not next week. It's 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'll get my calendar date straight.
Don't worry.
But
why start now?
Why start now? That's right. But other than that, it's looking pretty good. What about yours?
Well, you mentioned the Creeping Charlie, and there was a section in the back part of the lawn that was difficult to get to. And we did have a lot of those lilies back there and a lot of those ornamental grasses. So there was a section there where it didn't get mowed or treated as well as it should. And I noticed, I went back and took down the old compost bin that was in that back part of the corner, and boy, some Creeping Charlie has started to overtake that back corner of the lawn. So I got to get that treated, and as we discussed last week, this is the time to do it, early autumn, I guess.
It's one of the better times. Yeah, definitely.
Or when it's in bloom. I heard you say that to one of our listeners last week.
Right. Well, we're in the, you know, we're at the point in time, if you're going to start thinking about renovating your lawn or repairing your lawn or starting a new lawn, or if you're just finishing up a new home, you know, new construction, establishing your lawn, now's the time to start planning that stuff out. You know, that's what the month of August is really truly for. Although it's still relatively, it's been brutally hot. And again, when those temperatures are like what they have been, refrain from spraying anything on your lawn. You're going to do more damage to the turf than you are getting rid of what you're trying to spray. So, that's what's really important. But now's the time to start thinking about what you need to do. If you need to grade things out, you know, map out a game plan. You know, if you're going to reseed areas, and or if you want to, you know, see our friend over there at Turpin Farms, do a little sod. You know, it's your choice, but it's starting to plan that stuff out. And if you need to kill a lot of things, Now's the time to think about it, too. Next week, the temperatures are supposed to be relatively decent, low 80s.
Uh-huh.
And, again, we're going back to the ideal, you know, spring temperatures if you're wanting to take care of some of those issues. Once you break 85, just forget it. Good night, Irene. Lights out, because you're not going to want to spray at that point in time. But we're there. And be ready to sow grass seed at the beginning of September.
Yeah, just as you mentioned, here's a little bit of your forecast. Pop-up showers throughout the course of the day today.
Mm-hmm.
High of 88. Much the same for tomorrow. High of 84. And then Monday, more showers, but they'll start to move out on Monday afternoon. High of 83. Then we have sunshine, lower humidity, and highs in the mid-80s for about 3 days, according to today's forecast. And overnight lows will be 68. So you're spot on with your forecast there, Tony, about this is the perfect time to get some of that stuff out and get it treated and make
sure
that...
Oh, yeah. I've been trying to get on with the Weather Channel. Yeah.
Hey.
I'm trying to take over that Al Sleep. When you have Al Sleep.
Yeah.
The hippy-dippy weather.
So that's where we're at right now.
You know, I can't wait till fall either. You know, a lot of people have been kind of, you know, up in arms about some of their window boxes and their containers and their landscape beds, and they're always asking me, you know, what's it like? What's it been like? What are people saying? Mm-hmm. Are they losing things? Are things struggling?
Yeah.
They have been. And it's not anything that you're really doing. It's just when you're up in the 90s like that all the time and high humidity, stuff really sometimes it struggles.
Sure.
It really does.
Yeah.
We were talking about things last week that does relatively well in those kind of situations, and I was telling you that we really put some emphasis this year, Tina and I, when I say that, on Lantana. It's a great annual. It's a wonderful blooming annual. It loves the heat. And, you know, when you're setting up and working on your window boxes and planters and so forth, look for things that can tolerate those situations, because you're going to save yourself some headache and from becoming dismal about, like, wow, what's going on with my window boxes?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, what I'm leading up to is we're not far away from the fall season. You know, I'm thinking mums. I'm thinking the ornamental cabbage and kale. I'm thinking about temperatures getting, you know, in that pleasant stage, low 70s, mid-70s is high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the highs during the day or during the week. But I can't wait. Fall's my favorite time of the year.
I don't mind it at all. Allergy season kind of kills me just a little bit, but I know my wife Lisa is chomping at the bit. She can't wait to have that first fire in the fireplace at the house, but we're reconditioning that area too. We have a little bit of that firewood left to split and stack and get up on the porch, but...
Won't you just buy that and have it delivered? Get rid of what you
have. I don't save yourself some time. I don't have your money, or I would.
I'll loan you some at a small rate.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know.
Well, it's good physical exercise. It's it really is something to keep active. You know, a body in motion stays in motion.
Oh. you were doing all right until you said that.
But I do enjoy it, and we have a good time. We complain the whole time we're doing it, but then it's nice to sit there on the porch and in the rocker after we get it all, you know, ready to go.
Mom, Paul, cattle.
That's
up
what
there, up there on the porch.
That is so funny if you say that. We kind of chuckled not long ago. We were sitting on the porch talking about a couple of things we wanted to do in the yard and kind of made that reference to, you know, here we are in our rockers on the porch. Now, there is, I don't know why, but we noticed over the last couple of weeks, Lisa's the one that noticed it, some of the neighbors up behind our house, there's some young people out there that have taken to, on Fridays or Saturdays, climbing up onto the roof and sitting in lawn chairs up on the top part of a deck cover in their lawn chairs. They got their cooler up there. They've got their
binoculars, telescope watching you guys. Is that what you're telling me?
No, Lisa's the one that called me and said, I don't know what's going on over there, but there's three guys sitting up on the roof with a cooler, and they're in their lawn chairs. And I said, well, maybe they're getting ready for this little meteor shower that's going to be going on later.
Oh, that's right. There was a meteor shower the other night.
Yeah. And she said, at this pace, they're not going to see it. So yesterday afternoon, I noticed that there was a little commotion. I stopped for a moment. there they were putting their lawn chairs up on the roof and dragging their cooler up. And a few minutes later, this young lady in a little black dress and long blonde hair climbed right up there with them, and they were having a great old time.
Wow. What if they would have invited you up on the roof?
Not a chance.
Through it?
Either through it, but, you know, like, it was awfully awfully hot there.
No trucks over 2 tons?
Yeah. Yeah, see the weight limit on the overhang.
Yeah, see the weight limit.
But I can't wait to find out what it is. Oh, I know what they're doing. They're just young and partying and having a great time, but if they got a chance to see the meteor shower last night.
Interesting, up on the roof.
Hey, there's an old song like that.
James Taylor, wasn't it?
Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I have a great show lined up for you. Several guests coming in later on in the show. We're going to cover an awful lot of ground. And now's the time to try to get ahead of the game when it comes to your lawn care and your landscape beds.
Absolutely. You know, just another tip, you know, when it comes to talking about the lawn and getting ready to take care of it and fix it up or sow seed come, you know, September, is to get a soil sample.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. Kind of, it's the foundation of what's going on with your lawn, and it's real easy to do. Just go ahead and, you know, you want the top 2 inches of the soil only. Take it to your local extension office, have them send it off to the universities or wherever it is that they have it tested, and find out what it's comprised of. Start there. A lot of times, you know, especially the older generation, I hear it often, sweeten the soil or put a little bit of lime down. You know, don't just go arbitrarily putting lime down on your lawn, because, you know, for the most part, you know, our soils here in this area are pretty high in pH levels, you know. Pretty much, you know, there's a lot of very high alkalinity, so to speak. So you got to be careful with that. So just get a soil sample. That's really, really important.
Yeah, and it's easy to do. Most of that is free services, and it tells you a lot about what's going on in your soil. A lot of times people will have issues. I keep doing this, and it's not working.
Right.
And they're not trying to find the heart of the problem.
Right. Well, it has a lot to do with it. You know, and wait until the fall to fertilize, and wait until the fall to core aerate or dethatch your lawn. That's really important, too. That's when it's ideal to do those things, so keep that in mind. We're ready to turn the corner here in September. That's the first of the fall applications for fertilizing your lawn. Using the Fertilume, you know, that's the best time to get into the three-step program.
Uh-huh.
That's the orange bag, Lawn Food Plus Iron. So we're right there. And try and get that down around... you know, the Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. So, don't just sit around at cookouts.
Well, you can do that too, you know.
Yeah, Tony, we have Kim on the line from Independence who's got a question about her lilac bush. Hi, Kim. Doing wonderful. How old is your lilac bush?
You know what? I got it from a nursery, and it's a small one. It's called Dwarf Kim.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Miss Kim.
Right. Yeah, Miss Kim. I'm sorry.
Nope.
And it was planted, I guess, maybe in like April or May. And I've noticed that the leaves are starting to curl and turn like really brown.
It's Miss Kim's known to do that.
Oh.
And a lot of that has to do with the, you know, environmental conditions and situations. You know, so a lot of the rains that we've had, you know, the high humidity. And it's kind of one of the drawbacks to Miss Kim.
Oh,
but if you see that, don't be alarmed. Also, could be an indication it had gotten dry a time or two. You know, you get a little bit of leaf scorch. Nothing really to be concerned about, to be quite honest with you. Don't prune it out or anything, because she has already set up bud to bloom for you next spring.
Okay, so just leave it alone, right?
Mm-hmm. And make sure that you're not watering her too much either.
Okay.
You know, if you ever have question of that, just pull the mulch back, use your index finger, and see if the soil's moist. And if the soil's moist, let her go. You know, just again, some of our shrubs in the landscape, an inch of water a week is adequate. You know, and things that have been newly planted, you just check them more often. But we don't want any of those shrubs or our trees sitting in water or watering too much.
Right, right.
But
you say that all the time, so I was really careful not to water it a lot. But then I thought maybe I'm not watering So okay.
I'd rather see you a little bit to the dry side versus overly right. wet, anybody, okay. as far as that goes. But just wait it out. You're fine. Miss Kim has been known to do that. I love the foliage on Miss Kim, especially in the spring. It's nice. It's got that real dark green color to it. It's you know, it's denser than some of the other palibans, the dwarf Korean lilacs and so forth. But nonetheless, don't worry about it. That's pretty right. common.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much, you all. I love Thanks. Your show.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, sometimes you can make a big mistake, an error in judgment if you think, oh, there's something's wrong here. I'm going to trim these dead pieces out, and then you don't get any bloom. So then when you see it the following year, you go, it's not blooming. Something else right. might be wrong.
Right. And, you know, just things, that, just a good rule of thumb, things that bloom early spring, they set up their bloom buds the prior season. You know, so once you get past you know, the 4th of July weekend, always just kind of use that as a reference point.
Uh-huh.
You know, things that bloom early in the spring, do not prune anything back. Unless you're willing to forego some blooms. You okay. may not cut out all the blooms, but you will some at least.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the 3 Ds, the pruning, you know, anything that's diseased, damaged, or dead. And there are those situations where things have been planted in the wrong place, and it becomes an obstacle.
Sure.
So therefore, you need to decide, am I going to move this? Am I going to cut this out? What am I going to do?
Right.
So it's just one of those things. I've never really have seen anyone lose a shrub or a tree because they pruned at the inopportune time. Mm-hmm. I'd rather at times see some people do some form of pruning versus none.
Gotcha.
So that's just a good thing.
And we really want that beautiful display of flower and color
mm-hmm.
and to greet us in the spring. And a lot of people sometimes go, that didn't happen this year.
No.
It must be dead. I'm digging it out.
And I hear this often, too, especially with new homeowners or people who really aren't well-versed with particular shrubs. It's like, I want a shrub that blooms all summer. Well, it's kind of hard to find.
Right.
You know, most everything has a bloom period or a blooming cycle. And therefore, you know, you kind of just stage things with different bloom periods. But that was a great question. Miss Kim sometimes, and I'm telling you, there's a lot of funky stuff going on with plants right now,
mm-hmm.
and it has so much to do with the humidity that we've been having.
Right.
You know, those high temperatures, you know, just it's brutal. It's really brutal. And a lot of times, especially with hydrangeas, is a great example. You know, they'll wilt in this kind of heat.
Right.
And you're looking at that as a homeowner, and you're going like, little guy, are you okay? Sweetie, come over here with the watering can. Keep watering it. Back off. You know, check the moisture level in the soil there. I can't say it enough. Yeah, I'd rather see it a little more on the dry side than it being overly wet all the time. Watering every day is not the solution.
Right. It doesn't rain every day, and Mother Nature isn't designed for mm-hmm. that.
And I can't really, nor can anyone else, honestly tell homeowners or individuals like when to water, because every little area around our homes is its own little microclimate.
Right.
You know, if it's up next to the house and you have a brick house, you know, and there's a lot of sun, there's a lot of heat that radiates off that brick. And as a result, you may experience some leaf scorch with your shrub or your tree that's close to that area. The soil tends to dry out a lot. You know, people who have a tendency also to, I'm seeing a lot more of this, landscaping, like mulching with stone.
Mm-hmm.
When that stone gets hot, it wicks that moisture up off the soil surface.
Sure.
And, you know, things have a tendency to dry out a little more, too.
Gotcha.
So, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play, you know, around our homes. Like I said, we have those little microclimates. And pay attention to those.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking a little bit about some of the conditions we're getting through. Second weekend of August, and you know, at this point, we have to start looking ahead to next year.
Next year, we have the fall you have to go
in. I mean, in preparation for how you want your lawn and beds to...
You got it.
To be and to look. Yeah.
Still got plenty of time, so now is the time to start thinking about it. That's what I'm trying to put some emphasis on, because don't wait till the last minute and then say, hey, I have some lawn issues I want to take care of, and it's middle of October.
Right.
Because that's not the best time to do it. You might get away with it some a time or two, but You know, planning that thing out early is the best thing that you can do. You know, something else I want to bring to the table this morning is the old American pawpaw tree.
Pawpaw tree.
Pawpaw tree. Absolutely.
And tell me about that.
Well, I just got to thinking about that the other day. I was over at the my little watering hole over in Northern Kentucky, and someone that works there is like, hey, you know, start talking about these pawpaw trees that they have on our farm. And I'm listening to her, and my response is, I'm still embarrassed to say this, but I've never had a pawpaw. I even said that last year. I had never had a pawpaw.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand, too, because I'm just thinking of this, because there's a couple of festivals that kind of theme on the pawpaw tree, and there's one up there in Cincinnati or Northern Ohio somewhere, if I'm not mistaken, because I was talking about this once before, may have been a couple of seasons ago. Up there's a pawpaw festival at Lake Snowden in Albany, Ohio.
Okay. Never heard of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, it kicks off September 16th and runs through the 18th. But that's just like right around the corner, too. So everything, I guess, is kind of timed as the pawpaw starts to ripen, you know, when people start to pick and whatever. But apparently, I understand that the flavors resemble something like the maybe a banana or a pineapple or a mango or a combination of the three. Sounds like a good drink mix.
It does.
You know, on a hot afternoon.
Throw a little vodka in there and you're ready to go.
Yeah. So I really don't know, but you know, the Native Americans, you know, they used to rely on the pawpaw tree.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a few this year in the nursery. Some people gravitate towards it and some don't. But I'm embarrassed to say I've never had one. And I think there's a pawpaw tasting event that's coming up at the Boone County Extension Office.
We should go to that.
I have to check into that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? You say that all the time, but I know that I won't be able to get you there.
That's not true.
I don't know.
If it involves food,
well,
I'm more likely to go.
But you'll have to behave when if we in fact are to do something of the sort when we get there, you know.
Uh-huh.
Portion it out. Don't go all in. Wait till everybody gets to sample it, then right. Go back.
The entire tray's not
I've
for
seen
you.
I've seen you in action before.
Well, I want to get my.
But you know, is the pawpaw tree? Is it gaining notoriety again? Is it? You know,
I hope so.
The edible movement is still big.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It would be interesting for us to either make it a trip to the pawpaw festival. To see what other kinds of things they are.
And just where is Albany, Ohio? I'm not really sure. I've never been there.
Mm-mm. And then attend the thing at the Boone County Arboretum.
Now, that's coming up. Okay. But, you know, apparently, too, there's a lot of antioxidant properties that's found in the twigs of the pawpaw tree and the leaves. And it's being used for anti-cancer drugs and other botanical pesticides. So that's kind of interesting. You'll like this. I think even skin moisturizers are being formulated from the pawpaw antioxidants. And thought to believe to prevent the wrinkling that you're starting to experience. What do you think about that? You like those skin moisturizers?
Well, I'm not going for the Botox, that's for sure. So if there's a natural solution to this weathering look, I'd be interested. But
I would be natural. So anyway, I threw that out there.
Yeah.
I often, you know, it just when it comes up, like I said the other day, someone was asking me about the pawpaw fruit, and I'm like, never had it.
Well, it might be like the rhubarb pie that you brought in. It might be that it's delicious, and we should try some.
Wasn't that a treat though?
It was.
I forgot all about the rhubarb pie. Strawberry pie.
Yeah.
Strawberry rhubarb, however.
It was quite delicious.
It was. Mm-hmm. We polished that off. We did well.
Pretty quickly. Hey, make sure you get a chance to jump on to our Facebook page. It's a great way to stay connected with us. You can post questions and pictures, and we'll respond back to you as soon as we can. We need to take a visit there and make sure we haven't missed anything. And also wanted to talk to you about one of our listeners that posted, Leah, out in Walton, about her hill, how it rolled downhill to a little fence area. We'll talk about that when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Again, make sure you jump on our Facebook page. Got a couple of great videos there where we have visited some of our local leaders. And again, it's a great place for you to post pictures and pose questions, and we'll get back with you. Tony, we have Ron on the line from Owensville who has a hedge apple tree. A question. Oh, and he appears to have gone away.
Well, give us a call back. That's the old Oso sage orange.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'm in a fog this morning. The old hedge apple tree that we talk about occasionally that wards off spiders.
Right.
You put those in the garage or whatever, or the basement. So if you get a chance, give us a call back.
Yeah, I guess his question was, what is the purpose of them?
I don't know. Get rid of spiders.
Yeah, so give us a call back, and we'll see if we can't get a solution for your an answer
That's
for you. What is the purpose? Because, you know, when you're growing up, you're told not to handle them, don't mess with them, don't eat them. They're poisonous and all that stuff. You hear every imaginable story. And then later on, you find out, well, if you put them down in the cellar, down in the basement, it'll ward off spiders.
Yeah, is that a fact or a myth or what? That's interesting.
Yeah.
We used to throw those at one another when I was a kid, so I don't know what to say about that.
Great ammo during those fights back in your youth.
I don't know.
That's around Halloween, they were handy, too.
Oh, yeah, they were handy. Actually, trying to think what fairway over at Twin Oaks where I would pick a few of those up, and my buddies were like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. It was on, I think it was on five. Fairway five. As you got close to the green, there's a hedge apple tree or whatever.
I remember that.
Yeah. So I would pick a couple of those up, put them on the cart, and they're like, what the heck are you doing? So
I'm going to fend off some spiders.
There you go. Yeah. They say that it does that.
Mm-hmm.
So they
were always in our house growing up, you know. So, hey, we have Ron back on the line. Ron, do you have a couple of hedge apple trees on your property?
Hello.
Hello, Ron. Do you have a couple of hedge apple trees?
Well, actually, not on my property. Next door on a farm I grew up in. My call dropped, but maybe I'm not talking about the same thing.
Okay.
They're fairly good-sized trees, and they have this, I don't know, like huge softball type.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's real.
That's the Osage orange tree. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like he was earlier saying, growing up, you know, you're told not to touch them, whatever. Honestly, I live out in the country, and we pretty much use them for 22 target practice. Was about the only useful thing we could find.
Never heard that one. That's good.
But it was just, I heard you talking about the pawpaw tree, and that just popped in my mind. And, you know, I see them all the time, but just never knew if they had a purpose.
You know, I don't know. Very interesting, to say the least. I would have to do a little research or check it out. I think that was named after, wasn't there an Indian tribe, Osage Indians? I think there's a little history behind that tree.
Really?
To be quite honest. Yeah, I have to check that out.
Well, I'll do the same. I'll see what I can find out about it. But, yeah, just the pawpaw tree just got me thinking about it. So
mm-hmm.
Maybe you guys not
know. Well, now, Ron, we can add that target practice to the list of all the things they're handy for.
It is quite handy.
Yeah, that's very funny. But
where are your surroundings in the background, though?
Yeah, clear the target, as my CCW exactly. instructor, Dan Houston, would say. First thing you need to do is clear the target.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call back. Appreciate you taking the time, and we'll see if we have anybody else that uses them for target practice. That's pretty funny.
You're welcome, guys. Have a good day.
You too, Ron.
Now, you know, I'm looking something up on this real quick, and I think that was primarily used, from what I'm reading, as they used it along property lines as a living fence to
separate. Barrier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So very interesting. Other than, you know, it having some sort of an insect repellent quality about it, you don't hear much about it.
Right. Right.
But I think it was named after some Indians, if I'm not mistaken. But, boy, we used to hurl those things at one another. I remember that well, so it's funny.
Mm-hmm. Did you you get rid of your old dryer? I was just going through our Facebook page, and I came across the post from last week.
Well, this is what I ultimately ended up doing with the dryer.
Uh-huh.
I had that thing apart, tested everything from A to Z, and it was the control board.
Yeah.
So the control board, to purchase it new, was $200-something. Mm-hmm. It ranged from $207 to $295, which equated to about 34% of the cost of a new one, something comparable.
Right.
So, Ernie, I hate to say this, I was a little uptight about it because they make you not want to repair things and keep things going.
Sure.
Because what else could have gone wrong? You know, the heating element could have gone out on it or what have you. But I broke down and bought a new one. I'm embarrassed to say that. I really am. I don't like to do things like that, but that just wasn't feasible. What do you think? Am I going to get your support with this? Yes. Or
yeah? Oh, I'm horrible at repair.
Well, you know? I took that thing apart, put it back together a couple of different times. I could do it in my sleep, and come to find, I mean, a lot of those parts, you know, it just a lot of those are manufactured by Whirlpool. They're all very similar,
mm-hmm.
but when you're confronted with a situation where it's almost the cost of a new one or 30%, what would you do? Do you ever buy the extended warranty? That's something else that we need to hone in on. Are you an extended warranty kind of guy?
Yeah.
I don't.
You don't?
No. Mm. No. If you had to sell me a warranty for something, why do I want to buy it?
Yeah. I got you.
Huh? Are you in or you out? You look a little...
Well, because I'm trying to remember when we got the... we support the buy local, shop local, and we bought a new washer and dryer from Hagedorn out there on Dixie Highway. And I don't recall. I have to ask Lisa when she gets up if we bought the extended warranty. We very well might have, but I don't know if we did or not.
You know what I like about the extended warranty? Maybe you'll purchase one and it's for 3 years, but it overlaps the one the manufacturer gives you, the first one.
Hmm.
So that doesn't make sense, does it? So it should really be out 4 years, I would think. All right, I'll leave you. I can't talk to you anymore.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back.
From dealing with our friendly woodland creatures to fixing a leaky faucet, here's what's bugging you with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys on B105.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. What's bugging you, Tony? What do we got issues with this
week? I've seen a little fall webworm activity.
Fall webworm.
Yeah, you see those little tent worms, those webworms out on the tips of trees.
Uh-huh.
The tent caterpillar, usually the eastern tent caterpillar, you'll see that one earlier in the season where the crotch angles are on the trees or a little further down in the tree. And the fall webworm, it's out on the tips of the branches.
So those are two separate worms.
Yep, they're two separate caterpillars.
And what's the damage from the...
Nothing serious. I mean, if you have a pretty massive outbreak or infestation, they could chew on a little bit of foliage, a few leaves.
Right.
Kind of like you.
So we used to call the ones that you were talking about before bagworms. Are those the same ones?
No, bagworm kind of hangs down.
Okay.
Yeah, these are tent worms, fall webworms. But nothing really to be too concerned about. You know, you can go out there and if you can reach it, just take a stick and just turn it in there like it's cotton candy. You know what I'm saying? And pull it out. If you want to spray, you can use Thuricide from High Yield. It's a biological insect killer. It works great. It's safe to use. It has BT in it. So, and do it early in the morning or later in the evening when everybody comes back to the tent. You know, and you might have to jet the tent hard with water or poke it or prod it with a stick so you can get inside it and be more effective.
Okay.
But other than that, that's what's going on there. There's two varieties of those. You'll see a variety with a red head on it or a little black head. So they're both fall webworms, and you're seeing a little bit of that activity.
How long once you spray, I guess, can you see some...
It works on them rather quick.
Does it?
I mean, it's not like a knockdown like when you're jetting wasp or anything like that. But, yeah, it works on them.
Good.
It'd take care of your problems. How's that?
I like that.
So look for Thuricide from High Yield. It's a concentrated type of product. And you'll probably have to go with a concentrated product of the sort. There's other products that work as well, but I like this one in particular. But sometimes some trees, you can't get right to it. You'll have to spray up into it. So, and, you know, try and penetrate that tent to make it, you know, more effective. That's what's bugging some people.
And right now is the time to take. Get a hold of these things, because if you ignore them, they get worse.
You know. They'll feed a little while, you know, all of a sudden. Like I said, if you had a pretty massive infestation on a tree, say it's a larger tree, and there's a how I want to say it, maybe let's call them burrows, you know, there's a bunch of them up at the ends of the tips of the branches.
Uh-huh.
They could work on a tree and make it a little unsightly, but nothing to be overly concerned about.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I want to remind you to jump on our Facebook page. Other ways to stay connected with us via email, in and around the house at B105.com. What do you got going on down at Jackson's?
Getting ready for the fall season.
Uh-huh.
Cleaning things up, you know, like most other garden centers are. I'm assuming they are. But we're getting ready for the fall season and changing the store over. Actually, some holiday stuff's been arriving. But we got to put that in its place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we still have a whole nother season ahead of us. And that's the fall. But other than that, it's just been hot in the greenhouses. Been, you know, cleaning things up, working a little bit on the glass, which has been a pain in the rear. That's tough. Had a couple kids throw some stones through one of the greenhouses. That's what I thought.
Yeah, you know, never gonna.
That's not good. A little mischievous part there, but getting up there is not a pleasant thing. And as hot as it's been, you just get aggravated.
Yeah,
you get aggravated. So that's really what's been going on. Stuff's going to start coming in, you know, as far as mums and some fall decor, the ornamental cabbage and kale. Look for some of the ornamental peppers. You'll start seeing that stuff pop up at your local garden centers and nurseries. We're not far away. And you're going to start seeing some mums that are showing some color. And keep this in mind. Some of the mums that you'll see that are in full color or full bloom, they've been forced. And you're not going to get that longevity out of them. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, as the temperatures get cooler, they last a little longer if you're not getting a lot of rains and so forth. But, you know, if you buy mums early for some color, be ready to come back in and go with another shot. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's a little early just yet.
Well, yeah, we're a little early. But stuff, we're getting near. We're getting close.
Mm-hmm.
Things are starting, you know, some of the mums that are coming on naturally, they're budding up. Some might be starting to crack and show a little bit of color.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not far away. I can't wait. Fall's my favorite time of the year. And that's when you get to see, we don't talk about ornamental grasses often, but you start to see the ornamental grasses, you know, coming into play, you know, starting to show some of their blooms, the plumes. Right now I have some Hanlins, they're Pennisetums, and they have the most, these cool cattails. And you're starting to see things come into play, so to speak. And I just like the ornamental grasses this time of year. As we get to the fall, they start to give us a little bit of that plumage look.
Mm-hmm.
And you know we're getting close.
That close.
That close. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're going to be joined here just shortly from a couple good friends that I'm anxious to meet. I've already met Joseph Simcox.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a renowned botanical seed gatherer. He's led a lot of expeditions. We're going to get into that here just shortly when they arrive around 7:15, 7:30. And he has another guest with him, Irina Stoenesco. She's known as Miss Food, and we're going to hear what she has to say. I think we're going to talk a little bit about tomatoes, as a matter of fact.
Mm.
And this is going to kind of tie in to Vicky Tuis at Thistle Hair Farms. She's going to give us a call. We're going to talk about the big tomato festival that she has going on today.
Ooh, today?
Yes, and she has quite a few heirlooms to sample and sauces to sample. That's going to be well worth the drive over out into the Big Bone Lick area.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Jane on the line from Dayton. She's got a question for you about how late can you plant potted mums. Jane?
Yes.
Can you turn your radio down just a little bit, please?
Oh, let me move away from it.
Okay.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when we get the potted mums.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like to keep them in the pot for a while for decoration, right. And I put them out in the ground real fast. But right. How late can you plant those in the ground and still let them come back next year?
That is a great question. And a lot of that has to do with what's going on with the weather at the time. Keep in mind that this is one of the issues with moms. You know, we don't really call them hardy moms anymore. They're okay. Relatively shallow rooted. But the sooner you get them in the ground, Jane, the sooner they can get rooted in.
Get rooted, yeah.
So that's the key there.
That's what I was, you know, thinking, but I didn't know how late you could do that.
Well, it all has to do with the weather.
The weather, okay.
And you know, you might get away with it late October.
And a hard frost.
Yeah. And, you know, here's another element about moms that I find very, very interesting, and it's this. Leaving them intact throughout the winter months, and when I say that, I mean, do not cut them back once they die back, because a lot of people feel compelled, I have to clean up my garden or else it's chaos.
Okay.
That's the furthest from the truth. Leaving your moms intact and even your ornamental grasses creates winter interest in the garden. So if you get a light snowfall or a couple of inches and you peer out the window, you know, you just look at that plant and you say at one time it's just so full of life. And perhaps it might be in another couple of months if it makes the winter. But it gives you that winter interest. And leave them intact and then wait till you see the new growth at the base.
Okay.
And if you see new growth at the base of your mom plant come late winter, early spring, as things start to warm up and move on,
mm-hmm.
then cut the old plant out and let it come on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I have several moms in the yard. And I have a huge backyard, but in front yard. But I know what you're talking about. When they first start coming back,
uh-huh.
just cut off the dead branches then.
Yeah, and I've had better success with moms wintering over, allowing them to go through the winter intact.
Okay.
Than I did when I would cut them out and clean up the garden prior to the season. You know, the winter. Well, you know, the moms that you have now. Do you know what they are?
No, not really. My mother-in-law pulled up a bunch and gave me, and I planted them all over the place. They keep spreading.
Right.
And they get really, really tall. Now, let me ask you this. How late can you cut them back?
Good question. Usually, just a good rule of thumb, July 4th weekend is the last time you want to put the last cut or prune on them or pinch back.
Oh, no.
Did you just do it recently?
I was told the 1st of August.
Well, that might be all right. You know, again, everything has to do with weather and you know, sunlight, temperature, and all that other good stuff. But just a good rule of thumb, you'll pinch them back a couple times, and really the last time you want to do that is around July 4th weekend.
Okay.
And if you were a week later, then maybe you're going to see blooms a week later.
Okay, how far to cut a buck?
Usually, I go into them about a quarter, maybe a little less. It's not a lot. What we're trying to do is prolong that bloom.
Right.
Keep it from blooming so you don't go into it heavy.
Well, mine can get really tall.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you have the mammoth mums by chance?
I really don't know what they were.
Yeah.
Like I said, my mother-in-law gave them to me, and I planted them, and they just took off, and I've transplanted them, and they're still
You know,
working.
Here's a little trick. A lot of growers are using this approach when they plant mums, especially in like 12, 14-inch terracotta pots.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't hardly see this. You can't detect this. Are you familiar with like a real little light green netting?
No.
It's a type of netting when you sow grass seed and you put straw down.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What they're doing is cutting, they're getting netting and just laying it on the mum and allowing it to grow through it.
Oh.
And it holds it together. It keeps it from flopping over.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know what I'm going to try and do? I don't know if I can find a sample of that. I'll see if I can put it on Facebook at some point in time.
Okay, great.
But it keeps them from getting, like, top heavy, especially when it rains hard
right,
and they get
right.
lazy.
That's what happens to mine. They fall over.
Right. And then, you know, you have to resort to, like, staking them up.
Yes. Or tying them with, you know, string or something.
Exactly. You know, I wonder if like peony rings would work as well if you were to allow them
that?
The peonies.
Oh, the, yeah,
the
yes.
Peony rings.
My peonies fall over also, so we usually just tie them up with string.
Yeah, but you can buy those metal rings
mm-hmm.
and just allow them to grow up through that, and it should hold them upright.
Oh, I'll have to look for those.
Yeah. But, you know, the Belgian moms are good moms to rely on. You know, I can't say they're always hardy, but you had a great question about how late. You know, a lot of that has to do with the weather. Keep in mind that a lot of your moms, they're shallow rooted, and that's where that comes into play. Make sure that they're mulched in adequately going into the winter months. That helps them. It helps keep them from heaving up out of the ground. And what happens, since they're shallow rooted and they heave up a little bit, that crown freezes out.
Oh, okay. Well, I ain't had any trouble with that.
No. And look
like
for them.
Like I said, they just keep spreading.
Yeah, that's awesome. And look for the mammoth moms, a little different type of mom.
Okay.
Extremely, extremely cold tolerant and hardy. It was developed up at the University of Minnesota.
Good.
It has a daisy bloom to it. There's only a handful of colors or so to select from.
Okay.
But I think we've sacrificed some hardiness with some other varieties of moms over the years to get different varieties, colors, and so forth.
Right.
That we've sacrificed that hardiness to get, you know, the
colors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That helps a lot. And I'll look for those rings and
yeah, see if that helps. And that netting. I'm going to see if I can find a sample of that, and I'll put it on our Facebook page. I don't know if you Facebook or not.
Yes. I was on there couple of weeks ago. I was the one to call last week about, you know, that I had the question and I hadn't heard anything.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you got to prod me.
I know.
I missed that one.
Hey, we're all getting old, you know.
Well, yes, we are.
Well, thank you. You have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You guys too. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and great ways to stay connected with us. Pick up the phone, give us a call, 749-B105, and you can also jump on our Facebook page or email us, in and around the house at B105.com. Our guests have arrived. We're going to take a few minutes and get them settled in, and then we're going to get to them. But
you sound a little winded. You okay?
Yeah.
Wait, did you just run up and down the steps or what?
I did. I didn't realize we were coming back as quickly as...
Oh, you're good. Relax. You know. I'm worried about you over there.
I'll be all right.
You sure?
I think so.
I do know CPR if you go down.
Yeah, well, I don't want you doing the mouth-to-mouth thing.
No, I won't mind
if you jump on my chest, but that's okay.
I'll break a couple of those bones, the ribs.
But it's a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. And we've been talking a little bit about lawn care and about a couple of bed issues, landscape beds. And the First Step program, or I'm sorry, yeah, the Fertilum three-step program, the fall application.
That's the best time to get into it, absolutely. So don't think that the spring's always the best time to get into the Fertilum three-step program. The fall is, actually, to be quite honest. The two fall feedings are the most important, Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
It sets the stage for the following season for your lawn.
Why do you always look at me when you talk about feeding?
Well, because that's all you think about is food. And I'm trying to encourage you to stay on track.
Tony, we have Bill on the line from Union who's got a question about his Japanese maple and, speaking of food, about whether or not he should be fertilizing it.
Well, Bill, what kind of Japanese maple do you have? Is it a lace leaf or like a palmatum, your typical maple leaf?
It's just your typical maple leaf.
Do you know the variety? Is it a blood good or?
It's the blood one.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've had mine. She's about close to 18 years old. But not fussy. How does the foliage look on it right now? You getting a little sun scorch? Is it starting to change a little color?
It is starting to change a little color and does have the
sun spots on it. Yeah. So what is your question? You want to fertilize it?
Yeah, I wanted to fertilize it because fall and everything's coming up, and I wanted to, you know, get some fertilizer on it for the rest of the year.
Okay. A really good fertilizer to use, and I like this particular fertilizer because it's organic. There's a lot of natural elements in it, and it's like eating well. You know, it's not that quick fix with a synthetic type of fertilizer.
Yeah.
Espoma. Use they're either plant tone from Espoma or tree tone.
Okay.
And just go off of the recommended rates, and you'll be fine. Usually, you know, it'll call for two fertilizations throughout the course of the season, one in the spring, and then the second one typically in the fall, which will equate to half of the recommended rate that they call for in the spring.
Okay.
So other than that, you know, and make sure, you know, they'll get a little dry in the summer. I've seen a little bit of leaf scorch here just recently on some stuff, and that's to be expected as hot as it's been.
Yep.
How old is yours?
It's actually not very old. I'd say maybe 7-8 months old.
Oh, yeah, it's relatively new. So
yeah.
Just don't goose it with high nitrogen fertilizers.
Okay.
You know, just use stuff that's easy, that's like eating well, and you'll be fine. Make sure you go through the winter months, you know, like 2 to 3 inches of mulch. Japanese maples, this is another interesting element about them. They're somewhat shallow rooted. So, okay. You know, just keep that in mind, and all should be well for you. Great specimen right there.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you Bill. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have been covering a lot of ground today. I have the first of our couple of guests in the studio with us, and we are about to educate you on the tomato.
The tomato. We were talking about this last week, and you know, yeah. As a matter of fact, I had some delicious BLTs this past week, Ernie.
You didn't put any mayonnaise on them.
I did. And I know that you're not the mayo person, but it was real mayo. Fresh tomatoes. As a matter of fact, some that Vicky Tuas had given me a little while ago. So we'll talk more about that because she's got a little tomato festival going on this weekend. But our special guests are with us, and we've met Joe before, Joseph Simcox, and you're a botanical explorer. I find that very, very interesting. And when we first met back in April, you were here in Cincinnati, and it was very nice of you to come to the Queen City and hang out with everybody at the Seed Swap. Good morning, Joseph.
Hello there.
Good morning.
Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
And I also want to introduce your very nice-looking cohort here. I'm just kidding you.
No, no, I
don't mean
I
that in a bad way. This is Irina Stoenescu. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And where are you from?
I'm originally from Romania.
Romania. Very nice accent, by the way. So,
thank you.
So we're going to talk about the evolution of tomatoes, too. That's what you're going to bring into the scheme of things here, since the tomato is one of the...
Yes. Well, we entitled our presentation for today at Vicky's Festival that you were just mentioning, Tomatophilia. And we want to talk about this love story between people and tomatoes, how it evolved. It was actually a love-hate story.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to bring it to present-day agriculture and discuss whether or not what we're doing to our tomatoes is acceptable and if we like the result. And our opinion, mine and Joseph, is that we could do better. So...
Oh, you can always do better, right?
Oh, a lot better, I mean. We don't want tomatoes that taste like cardboard. And
oh, no.
If your listeners have the day off, they should go to Vicky's and taste those tomatoes that she's cultivating because they are awesome.
Oh, I agree.
Okay, let me be the first simpleton question here. Where do tomatoes originate? Do we know where they started?
Well, that's a question for the botanical explorer. So imagine, okay. Tomatoes most likely originated in Peru and Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And even in the Galapagos Islands, there were 13 species of tomatoes. And it seems by the evidence that tomato may have been domesticated in Veracruz, Mexico, almost 6,000 years ago. So this is a pretty impressive story about the love of humans and tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they made their way, after Columbus finds the New World, back to Europe, to Spain. And it's known from the first documentation in the 1500s that tomatoes were being cultivated in Spain. But the question then is, how did it become what it is today? Because tomatoes used to be a little tiny thing.
And didn't it have for some time a reputation of being poisonous for some reason?
Oh, terrible.
Yeah?
First of all, when they came into Europe, they came as ornamental plants. And they were looking down on them for several reasons. One would be that they associated it with being poisonous. Even going up to the 1700s, they thought that if you ate them, and in particular if aristocrats ate them, they would get terribly sick and die.
Well, and what is an aristocrat?
What is an aristocrat? Yeah. High class.
Tony over here.
High class, yeah. Us, yeah, us
here. It has to do with how they were eating tomatoes.
Well, that's exactly where I was going, yes. Oh. They were putting them on pewter plates, which contained lead. Because of the acidity of the tomato, the lead would leak, so you would get food poisoning. And you could even get worse than food poisoning. It depends how much your body absorbs.
That's interesting. You know that. No, I didn't either.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons, but there was also a classification mistake. They thought that they were nightshades, They were...
Well, they look like a mandrake. Mandrake right. is a mysterious plant of
old lore. Oh, you just fed me another good one. Yeah, yeah. They thought they were mandrakes, and that meant that they were aphrodisiacs.
Not wrong with that.
We can't have enough of those.
Oh, because you weren't living in that historical time.
The love apple.
The love apple, right. But they thought it was something negative. If it provoked an increase in sexual desire, it must have been bad for you.
Oh, no.
So that's what they thought. And, yeah, what's funny is they called it the golden apple. Which in Italian still exists, pomodoro.
Well, I'll tell you about the scientific name of them. Originally, they were named Lycopersicon, which from Greek means wolf, peach. So they call them wolf peaches. But the tomato doesn't really get its start in America until it comes to Ohio. And this is some lore that is not really understood by most Americans. It was because of Alexander Livingston, who had a place in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. He started doing breeding back in the early 1840s. By the 1850s, he was introducing all kinds of amazing tomatoes. Among some of his classic heirloom varieties, which are still grown today, Livingston's Perfection, Giant Oxheart, Snow Queen, and wow. Paragon. These are four varieties which are still grown today, and they're old varieties that go back to Livingston. So he actually did studies in tomatoes. Reynoldsburg, Ohio, there is still a continuum of his seed company known as Livingston
yes,
in Columbus.
Yes, yes, I'm familiar with it. We have it at our garden center. And so do a lot of other local garden centers. So that interesting story.
He really popularized the tomato, which is amazing. And so if we look at the history of the tomato, we find that there's much maligned past, but it also is because heirlooms have bust into the scene over the last 20, 30 years. And I say bust into the scene because Americans kind of got away from food. That's the big problem. Americans got away from growing their own vegetables. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the early 80s, my grandmother and my aunts and uncles would get together for tomato canning parties. Mm. And we would all complain with each other. But the simple fact is, we had fun canning tomatoes. Yeah. And then people didn't know where their food was. And then it comes back again. Yeah. Heirloom tomatoes.
Right. And a lot of people are, there's a rebirth of the farm-to-table movement and canning. I know my wife, Lisa, loves to can. I enjoy the fruits of that labor, except for the sauerkraut thing. I still can't do that.
You gotta eat your sauerkraut.
it was one of those things growing up that... And this was true back
then.
He was
abused. He was force-fed sauerkraut.
That and liver and onions. And I knew when I got a whiff of that, that I was going to have to suffer through food. But my wife still loves it. And matter of fact, she just picked a bunch of green beans. She's going to be canning with a friend, Sherry Burdett, here shortly. So I'm fascinated. You guys are just a wealth of information. I hate to interrupt you, but we do need to pause for a moment. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have been covering a lot of ground and talking a little bit about tomatoes. And I've been learning an awful lot here already. And I'm just absolutely fascinated.
Very interesting. And we have Joseph Simcox with us. He's a renowned botanical explorer. He's been all over the world. And you've led a lot of expeditions just exploring different biodiversities.
I've gone on expeditions, Tony, just to look for tomatoes.
I like it. I like it. And we also have Irina Stoenescu. Is that right?
That is right.
And I saw in your bio, you're known as Miss Food, and I like that. Everybody likes food.
That is because I like to eat.
You like to eat.
So you like to
find
that.
So you like to uncover the juicy secrets about how people used to relate to their food and to one another, right?
I like food history.
Yeah,
like a hobby, because I believe it gives us insights into who we are as people. I think it's only recently that we're starting to rethink food in its cultural context, and I think we're craving for food with identity, food that tells us something about where we come from and also about other cultures. I am very partial to a new concept that's called food diplomacy, and essentially it's what its name suggests. It's learning about others and becoming more tolerant by understanding the cuisines of different countries.
So we learn about Chinese culture by going to the Chinese restaurant.
Mm. including, yes.
We've done that, haven't we?
We have. But one of the questions I wanted to pose to both of you when we were in the break, we were talking a little bit about that. Why do you think it took us so long to dig into what was causing health problems, weight issues, and our food issues? Did we get to a point where No one wanted to mess with it. It's easier to buy it at the store, and then we lost control.
And that's the whole thing. Last night I was speaking with somebody about this demise of our food system, and it all comes down to convenience. Mm-hmm. When people left World War II, the women especially had been under such duress working for the war effort, working in factories. There was so much interest in just being free that the whole convenience food movement came in. I was giving an interview out in California a few weeks ago for radio, and we were talking about how Campbell soup was started in the 1890s. It wasn't until about 1952 that Lipton introduced the French soup. So their French instant soup was a part of that whole convenience food scene that changed America, where people no longer had to be slaves in the kitchen, but could actually be able to have extra free time. So much so that now we pull up to the, you know, the drive-thru window, and that's where we get our food.
That's part of that, but there was also the standardization that happened in the 50s. People wanted things that they could easily recognize, that they would be uniform and look nice. And along with that came the ability to transport things across long distances. You had the development of suburban areas. You didn't necessarily need to grow your food locally because you could ship it in refrigerated trucks all the way from Florida. So that changed the dynamics of how we
looked on food.
I say
it's all about convenience. It's all about getting things easy and quick.
Right.
And that's not really convenient because now we see what it has done to us.
Yeah, agreed. And one of the things that Arena just pointed out, too, is about that, you know, the standardization of the uniform. We've been, I guess, conditioned that if you don't eat this brand, you're a loser.
Or, you know, it's a part of social engineering.
The best stuff.
It's social engineering, of course. I mean, that goes right to your story of the tomato, how it was commoditized and how it was needed to be packed and shipped for thousands of miles. Hence, we get our cardboard, or as some people say, tennis ball tomatoes. No flavor, nothing, just being shipped. Now that's changing.
And that's the truth. And that's why when we come out of the winter doldrums, we can't wait. I mean, that's the number one sought after plant in the nursery is the tomato plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to springtime, and you're right, people want it. They crave that good flavor, that good taste, that earthy taste.
And Joe and Arita, one of the things that we have noticed over the years doing the show is it's a race to see who can produce the very first
tomato. Well, you know the best tomato. There's two of them, 4th of July and Early Girl. My dad would plant both of them. And, of course, there was always a race whether Early Girl or 4th of July would come first. But remember, Early Girl's one of those acidic type of tomatoes, little kind of pale, not terribly flavorful as heirloom tomatoes go, because it can rightly be called an heirloom tomato. But the fact is, heirloom tomatoes are a bigger saga. It's a story of, as Arena said, love between a vegetable and people and a passion for it. And so we have a lot of emotions involved, so much so that there was an article that I mentioned as we were speaking, written in the Smithsonian in 2009 called The Case Against the Heirloom Tomato. This sounds absurd because heirloom tomatoes are now appreciated by people for flavor and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the point was that they were weak. They weren't resistant to diseases.
Right.
And somehow corporations had to step in and make them better. So the article goes on to say that Monsanto came in and is doing that job. There's a guy by the name of Doug who is breeding tomatoes at Monsanto. He's trying to introduce hybrid heirlooms that have more disease resistance. And it was interesting following the online critique of that article. People were enraged. They said, we love our tomatoes this way. We don't care if they're super disease resistant. We want something that is just fun. And that's part of the life, is fun. That's what people garden, don't they, Tony?
Right, for fun. That's what, well, and flavor.
And flavor, of course.
And I think we're seeing a resurgence with heirloom tomatoes, especially in farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
What Joe is referring to, sure, they're not as resistant if you put them on the shelf, leave alone disease resistance. We were speaking a while ago with a big tomato grower. I believe he's the third largest in the U.S. And he was saying that it's very difficult to introduce a new tomato or to try to raise commercially an heirloom variety because it's just not going to take the transport and the sitting on the shelf for a minimum of 7 days. Now, I don't feel comfortable eating a tomato that's been sitting there for 7 days. You know that if you go to a farmer's market, it's already soft. It's going to stay fresh for 2 or 3 days.
Well,
but people got it in their minds that it's perfectly acceptable and desirable to have something that lasts for a week on the shelf and then another week or two in your own home. So I think we need to change our mentality.
Expectations.
Right. If we want to recapture the taste.
Mm-hmm. If you want to have those juicy, super flavorful tomatoes. Now, interesting to point out, tomatoes actually get their flavor from the same ingredients that you find in Parmesan cheese. They're called glutamates, not to be confused with monosodium glutamate, right. But indeed very similar. They're savory flavor. So the tomatoes that don't have any flavor lack glutamates. And this is something that the modern tomato breeders are really taking an interest in. Now, it has to be said, there are two camps. There's the scientific camp, which is usually corporate and university America. Mm-hmm. And then there are also the passionate growers, the people who I know call the Michelangelos of tomato. In today's world, there are people like Brad Gates of Wild Boar Tomatoes out in California who are breeding tomatoes that are so fantastically beautiful that they will be tomorrow's heirlooms, because realize an heirloom has to take a few decades before it gets the denomination. Another guy who's doing tomato breeding who's right from this area is a guy by the name of Andy Bittner. He's creating tomatoes that are so beautiful that when you look at a little pellet of them, a box, it's like almost every color of the rainbow, from green, yellow, orange, purple, even to pink.
Have you ever heard anybody say that they're just too pretty to eat?
Too pretty to eat today. I hope to see that. Yesterday, we took a little visit to Vicky, and she was in chaos, the bedlam before the feast, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she had over 200 varieties of tomatoes. Now, I have a friend who is in Oblong, Indiana, or Oblong, Illinois. His name is Neil Lockhart, and he's the Forrest Gump of tomatoes. This guy has 5,000 plus varieties of heirloom tomatoes that he maintains, growing out 300 to 400 a year, and he can tell you every taste profile, every prolific nature of the plant, right down to how many fruits it produces. Amazing. And he rates them. Oh, that's a 1. Oh, that's a 10. And he gives very few 10s, so you want those seeds.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. And nothing better than a juicy heirloom tomato. I can't say it enough.
I asked him, I said, why did you get into this, Neil? And you're like thinking some philosophical answer.
Yeah.
He says, frankly, I like tomatoes.
Obviously. Yeah, which leads me to ask you this question. What is your take? What is your flair on grafted tomatoes? This seems to be... seems to be kind of, you know, being introduced here in the U.S.
Well, let's just look at the benefits of grafting. Grafting is just like when we have fruit trees and we're putting a variety on a better rootstock, because this is what this is about. This is about getting roots that will resist verticillium wilt, the VHS, what we used to call, verticillium fusarium.
Fusarium,
VF resistance, so verticillium and fusarium resistance, and these roots are just perfect. So no problem there. We're just getting a good, strong root base, and if you can graft it and have more resistance, why not?
I've had some customers bring me in tomatoes from grafted plants, and phenomenal. They're talking about how different they're behaving and performing next to others that aren't grafted.
Hey, listen.
So we're getting rid of that element of disease issues.
Absolutely. Listen, by no means are we against things that are rational. But when it comes to talking about, for example, genetically modifying things, we have problems, because there's something mysterious about putting a salmon gene in a corn or a bacteria gene in a corn. But when we can use technologies that make sense, like stronger rootstock, let's go for it. We're not a bunch of old timers who don't like new things.
But I also think that a lot of people have a problem about monocropping. We just talked about how exciting it is to have these 200 varieties that you get to taste. When you develop something that has quote-unquote the perfect qualities, because it's disease-resistant and it takes being on the shelf for 3 weeks, then you lose some of that excitement, and you lose some of that ability to cultivate a greater variety.
Monotony. Boredom.
Right. Mm. You get monotony. You also lose that connection with the farmer. I think that, especially with the new generation, and that's a paradox with what they call now millennials, people who are less than 35 years old. I think you see a certain amount of ignorance when it comes to how we produce our food, and I have to confess that I'm part of that. I have partially the same ignorance.
She doesn't know how to plant a tomato.
I was raised in the capital city. Our garden was so small, it was irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But I like to eat well. And I think this is also what the millennials are doing. They're getting their interest in food. They want to know where their food is coming from. They want to taste a lot of variety. Mm-hmm. And they're stimulating this movement and this resurgence of heirlooms.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We still have a lot of ground to cover, and we're talking about tomatoes. I'm learning a lot.
Oh, very interesting. And when we come back from out of the break, we're going to talk about the little tomato hornworm because, Joseph, you said something I would have never dreamt in a million years, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have been talking a lot about tomatoes, and I wanted to ask Joe, what's the most bizarre? Well, before we do that, let's get some contact information. How could people visit your websites? And,
it is a pretty fun website because, Tony, you were asking what a botanical explorer is, and I go all over the world studying fruits and vegetables. Kind of a fun job because I get to eat so many kinds of things. Now, one of the things that was interesting about an expedition we did a year ago to the Peruvian Amazon is that we went to this area, which is about 100 miles from the Amazonian town of Iquitos, and we were in this sweltering, hot Amazonian rainforest situation, and I found tomatoes growing. Now, most people, especially those in the American Southeast, know that tomatoes don't do well when it's hot and humid. Mm-hmm. And so here I was in this jungle region, and there was a tomato growing that was laden with beautiful fruits. They were harvesting them, and I asked the ladies, I said, do you put chemicals on these? And they looked at me like I was crazy. They said, no, they just grow. And these were huge plants laden with tomatoes. So what does this tell a guy like me, a botanical explorer? There's some good seed here. First of all, very resistant to heat and humidity, mm-hmm. mildew, and probable other diseases. And this is the kind of stuff we look for, not only because of its own proper resistances, but also for the potential for these Michelangelos to breed it into others. So no problem of taking beautiful genetics and putting them into new heirlooms mm-hmm. for the
right,
future.
Right. So is there a process or things you have to check? We'll ask this. We have Vicky on the line. I'm going to get Vicky to us.
Hey, Vicky, thanks for giving us a call.
Hello, hi. Vicky. Good morning. Hi. How are you?
Good, Tony. How about you?
Doing well. How does the show sound?
How
does the show sound? Aren't these guys awesome?
Oh, yes, very much.
Yeah. So great. Today's your big day. Tell us a little bit about what's going on at Thistle Hair Farm and the Tomato Festival.
Today, we are celebrating the tomato by having a tomato festival. This year, I don't know if it's insanely or smart, but I'm growing 212 varieties that I am working at saving the seed for our future seed swap that we do in Cincinnati, the Ohio Valley Seed Swap. And I'm encouraging people, everybody, to have a garden of some sort in their yard, whether it's on their deck, or in a small garden in the yard. But I want to encourage everybody to grow something in our community. So it's kind of where we're at. We're just going to be celebrating this wonderful fruit.
That sounds awesome. And I can't think of a better way to do it, too. Who doesn't like the tomato? Who doesn't like salsa? So you don't have a lot of things to sample?
We are going to be sampling as many as we can. Not everything is turning today, you know, for the event. Mm-hmm. But as many tomatoes as we can, we'll have out on the table this afternoon.
Awesome.
Well, let me just say this. I was at her house yesterday, and it was bedlam, tomato bedlam. She had tomatoes coming out of every nook and cranny in the house, and I was tasting as many as I could put in my mouth. I mean, there was delicious little sweet ones, little orange ones, little yellow ones, big, huge, whitish yellow ones. Oh,
I'm overrun.
Vicky, it's incredible.
Right.
And we're even going to present Tomatophilia today, which is supposed to be semi-theatrical, but I don't know if I can make it any more exciting. I know Irina.
Oh, you can make it exciting.
She's going to dance and sing.
Oh.
Well, my mother recommended that I should never, never sing unless I'm upset with someone.
Or drunk.
So
that's great. Vicky, give us a little bit of information, like where your place is, if whoever wants to come out and have fun today and see right. Joseph Simcox and Irina Stone-Nesco. Where are you?
Right. We are located in Union. We're at 10570 Big Bone Road, and that is, like I said, in Union. We're about 25 minutes from downtown.
That's so not too that bad. No, drive. Not at all. Not for a festival like this.
Right, and the rain is going to hold out.
There you go.
Promised, yes. So the big tent's pitched, and the girls are arriving as I speak,
and it's playing around on the golf cart, you know.
Hey, Vicki, you know how people always want to know about the farm-to-table type of production? I don't have to say anything other than I saw that Vicki had tomato hand yesterday. Do you know what tomato hand is, Ernie?
No.
It's when you're picking tomatoes and all the juice or all the kind of discoloration from the tomato gets on your hands, so you kind of greenish-black hands. So I knew that Vicki was picking all of these tomatoes.
Yeah.
And the green thumb, tomato hand.
Lovely.
Tomato hand, I like it. You have TH.
And you didn't talk about the grub yet. Vicki, do you have tomato hornworms?
We do.
Why don't you eat them? Just fry them up and eat them.
Yeah, listen.
That's right.
I've been doing something else when you talked about that. No, I let the parasitic wasps eat them.
Hey, listen to this. I went to Jungle Jim's yesterday, and he has a section of fried insects. And I was so overwhelmed and excited, I bought the giant June bugs, I bought the crickets, and I bought the mealyworm.
Oh, my.
And if I could have fried tomato hornworm, I would eat them. Because you know what? People don't know this. But if they research, they are going to discover that tomato leaves are not poisonous. There's a lot of misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't confuse the realities. Potato leaves are even deadly poisonous because they have an ingredient called solanine in them. But tomato leaves almost completely lack this substance, which means that they are edible. And there are top chefs in New York City who are making incredible pestos out of it. And the Japanese have discovered the nutritional properties of tomato leaves so much that they are freeze-drying it and turning it into a superfood. So today when I go to the tomato festival, I'll be the guinea pig and I'll eat some of your tomato things as long as you have no chemicals and I know you're organic.
I don't.
Okay?
Right.
I'll be gobbling them down.
He wants a jar of hornworms.
And a hornworm jar, please.
Well, I know that I've seen you and Patrick eating them.
Hey, so you know, anything that wiggles or squirms, we'll eat it.
I know. No, thank you.
All right. Vicki, have a great event. I'm going to do my best to get out your way. I'm going to bring my my dad out there. I know he'd enjoy this.
That will be awesome.
All right.
Thank you. And let Ernie know he's welcome also.
Oh, I appreciate
Ernie, you're
it.
Welcome. There you go.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you, Vicki. See you later.
Bye.
I'll see you in a bit.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. This has just been fantastic. I can't thank you guys enough for coming in.
Well,
just,
thank you.
By the way, Ron, thank you.
New zoo review for gardens.
But I'm going to pass on the worm eating.
See, we need to put you on the shelf when people come into the garden center. Hey, I have tomato hornworms. What can I use?
Here's a
jar. Here's a powder. Joseph Simcox powdered.
I don't like to just claim these things. Let's document this. I'm going to do a little more research, and before I get out to the thing, maybe we'll fry up a couple hornworms and I'll eat them.
So what are you frying them in?
A little olive oil, garlic.
Olive oil. Let's put a good olive oil together here.
I love it.
I can't wait till the next time someone calls us and asks us, how do you get rid of these things?
Eat them.
Joe says eat them. Pick them off and eat them. Fry them up first, eat them.
I was in Laos on an expedition looking for rare cucumbers. By the way, this is kind of funny because today we're talking about tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Last week I had a PR company in London, England, call me up, and they wanted to know if I knew anything about cucumbers. And I said, well, why would you like to know that? And they said, well, it sounds kind of weird, but there is an International Cucumber Day, and we represent Hendrick's Gin, which happens to be a real popular gin in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they want to promote National Cucumber Day, and we need a cucumber spokesman. Never in my life did I think that I would be approached to be an International Cucumber spokesman. Can you imagine? What an honor.
How much gin did you get?
I'm going to drink some with cucumber in it.
749-B105, in and around the house. This has just been great. I just am amazed at how much I've learned about tomatoes and stuff, too, today. This has been fantastic.
There's a lot. We're just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
We have to talk about Campbell's soup next, if we have a chance.
Yeah, we have time. But before we move to that, I want to ask you, when you go to these places for these searches for seeds and stuff, do you have any issues when you travel back in with restrictions?
Always there are restrictions. And this was predicted even 50 years ago. There's a great book, which is called Plants, Man, and Life, which was written by a man by the name of Edgar Anderson. And he puts it in on the plate 50 years ago, almost 60 years ago, that when big companies and governments realize how important seeds are, more and more restrictions will be placed upon their transmittal. After all, guys, This is something human beings have been doing for thousands of years. Mm. People have been trading and propagating and sharing seeds. It's part of humanity. So mm-hmm. it's rather strange that we're in this position in a modern world where seeds are looked upon as something illegal that right. you can't share because right. this is the way humanity did it. But the more interesting thing to answer your bureaucratic question is you can get the paperwork. There are people who actually will do it for you. And many of those people I use as a part of shipping seeds around the world. They get what's called a phytosanitary permit that essentially declares that the seeds are clean, free of disease and pests, and then you can ship them. So it's not that hard. It's just having to look into it and do it.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, the local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Campbell soup thing we were discussing earlier. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have just been
very
ripping it up.
Love
it's
it.
Been a great
I
show.
I love it. We have Joseph Simcox here with us, a botanical explorer. He's been all over the world. And his good friend, Irina Stoenescu. Is that right?
Stoenescu.
I like that. What were you telling me earlier? I could do the Olympics.
Yeah, with all that practice. Yeah, I said, right. You sounded pretty good. You could probably do the Olympics. When he told me that you guys were coming in today, we jumped on your sites and did a little Googling and searching around. And he said, "What do you think? How do you think she says that?" I have no idea, but that sounds pretty good. We're going to run with that. But thank you guys.
You've done a great job.
Thank you.
And you know what they say, learning foreign languages actually helps you avoid old age diseases. So you're not going to get Alzheimer's and you're not going to get dementia.
Just by saying my name.
But just practice foreign languages.
Yeah.
Did you hear that, Ernie? I only know one, so I need to work on a second.
See. and you're from
Romania.
Romania.
She should be from Rwanda.
And Joseph, where are you from?
I was born in Michigan. I'm a mongrel.
Oh.
You know, yeah. German, Austrian, Polish, English, even American Indian.
You're a mutt. Yep. Just like me.
Exactly. Purebred American.
That's the great thing about that. We get to celebrate all the holidays.
That's right.
All of them.
But we wanted to, again, revisit some of your contact information, a couple of things here in our last segment with you that we didn't get a chance to cover because the conversation has been fantastic. And we just absolutely
I wish we could talk for weeks, guys. This is so fun.
We'll do it again. Yeah. We'll do this again, definitely.
Because what we talked about in the break is staying in touch with you, and we can set up a show where we'll get you on the air, wherever you might be, we'll have you call in and we'll do segments.
He will have to try that. I was just in Africa and somebody was trying to do a show out in L.A. and mm-hmm. it was terrible. My Skype kept cutting out.
Yeah.
So we'll do it with a good service, maybe an online or a land phone.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So there are a couple of things we wanted to touch base on, the Campbell soup thing that we visited briefly, but there were a couple of other things you wanted to bring up.
Well, you know, most people don't realize it, but when factories start producing food, they need a ready supply of lots of it. And so Campbell soup was really into tomato breeding earlier in the century. And one of the most famous tomatoes that Campbell soup came up with was a variety called KC-146, which was that perfect tomato because it had the acidity and a super potent flavor, and it could be processed by the truckloads. And so to this very day, Campbell soup has varieties which are specifically bred and selected for their soups. Campbell soup came out, by the way, as I mentioned earlier, in the late 1890s. Now, the same thing applies to other varieties of vegetables, including pumpkin pie. Libby's pumpkin pie came from one variety of squash, which was raised specifically for that company. And still
so you would say, in a way, Campbell soup did promote this uniformity of food.
In a way.
I think you see it with Andy Warhol's famous Campbell.
The print.
Yeah, well, that's a really famous print, but
a lot of
there's a lot of misinformation about that. One of the stories was that Andy Warhol's mother fed him Campbell soup for every day of his life.
Oh, it could well be a myth. I'm not sure that's where it came from.
You say it's a myth.
There are competing interpretations on that piece of work. Some say that it was reminiscent of childhood and it was kind of like a Madeleine in Proust's novel, while others say that it was a critique of
mass production.
Yeah. Right. And I'm inclined, based on your story, to think it was the latter.
I think his mother gave him too much Campbell's soup.
I know it was a staple in our house. You know, it was one of those things growing up in the 50s and 60s that was what
And again, open the can, add milk.
Yeah. Easy.
Yeah. Convenience.
What'd you put in there? Was.
You would add milk to the Campbell soup tomato soup. Tells you to on the can.
No.
Did you ever read it?
I didn't eat the tomato soup.
Doesn't tell you to add milk?
Either milk or water.
I was a vegetable.
Well, my mom added milk.
You know, talk about convenience. You remember the macaroni where you take the spinnerets or the twisties and you take a can of Campbell's cream of mushroom and you just pour it in there and stir it around.
Oh, yeah.
And eat it.
Yeah.
I loved it as a kid, but so convenient.
As a peanut butter
That's why we're
guy.
In our problems, Ernie.
Isn't that the truth?
Give us your contact information again, if you don't mind.
So there are several great ways to contact me and several great ways to follow this crazy work all over the world. One of them is a website called ExploreWithJoseph. That's JOSEPH.com. ExploreWithJoseph.com, all one word. The other way to follow is on Facebook. I have pages including Gardens Across America, the Joseph Simcox page, which you can follow now. And it has all of our crazy escapades and fruit discoveries and vegetable discoveries, as well as wonderful stories about the way food has come about. And so this is an interesting thing to follow. And we have another called The Botanical Explorer, which is a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those. And plus we have videos and movies on some of our expeditions, including one which you can find on Vimeo called The Fruitful Forest. You just Google Fruitful Forest, and it's a one-hour-plus documentary that was produced by Anthony Rodriguez of Connecticut, who is a videographer and my editor. And it's an amazing adventure into the Amazon, discovering fruits and vegetables, and maybe even this tomato that was mentioned in there.
Awesome.
Really cool.
Awesome.
And we'll get those links up on our Facebook.
We'll do that.
Thank you so much.
Irina?
Ways to contact? I think the easiest one would probably be LinkedIn. So if you just look up my name, which I'm going to have to spell, it's... It's I as in India, R as in Russia, I as in India, N as in Nancy, A, that's my first name, and my last name, now get ready for this one. S as in Sam, T as in Tom, O, E, N as in Nancy, E, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, U. So if you just Google that, LinkedIn will pop up, and if you'll send me an invitation, I'd be happy to connect with you and chat.
And we'll do that.
Right.
We'll get that
a
link.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
I can't wait to come back for cucumbers.
Okay. I'm in. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up next, Jason from Herman Services is going to be joining us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been covering a lot of ground this morning, and we are welcoming in Jason from Herman Services, and thanks for coming by again. I can't wait to brag.
Here you go.
Last time you were on the show, we were talking about things going on, plumbing and stuff around the house, and I had mentioned that, you know, I had both the spigots, the water faucets outside of my house, had this little spritz coming out of the nozzle area. And you said, it might just need to be tightened down. Get a pipe wrench and give it a little turn. Well, lo and behold, I stumbled across the pipe wrench in my house or my garage or shed somewhere I was cleaning out and went, oh, I didn't know I had one of those. I think I'll go give this a try. Just a little turn. It stopped leaking.
That's good.
I'm in that home repair.
Hey, he's on his way, isn't he? Baby steps.
Like you said, baby steps.
Then I ran around to the front and did the same thing. I was like a proud rooster walking around with that thing. Of course, I had to grab my wife and show her three or four times. Did you see what I did there? I got that fixed.
I'm surprised you didn't go down the street and ask the neighbors if they needed anything fixed.
Yeah. Sling the pipe wrench over my shoulder and start walking around. Yeah. I'm here to help.
He's an outsider. He's not from around here.
That's right. Yeah. Well, welcome to the show. How's things going?
Everything's going good. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, great. We're right in that season where it's the middle of August. And did you get a lot of air conditioning repair issues this year? Because it's been hot and muggy and ugly.
It's still going on.
Is it really?
It's... The heat and humidity right now with air conditioning, I mean, it's really hard for air conditioners to keep up in a lot of situations. It could be, you know, the insulation of the house or the equipment getting old or whatever else. But it is it is a constant issue right now just with the amount of heat. The systems are really getting a decent workout, I guess I would
say.
Right,
right.
So one thing I would tell everybody in, like, a lot of our calls and a good majority of our calls, a lot of times it's just a dirty air filter that's causing the problem. So somebody's going with spending the night with an uncomfortable house or coming home from work to a warm house, and we get there, you know, as soon as we can. But sometimes that could be a delay in time. And then we get there and it turns out that it's just a really dirty air filter.
Right.
So I would suggest, like, when the system's running more like it is right now, you're moving more air through that system, which means you're going to pick up more dust, and the filter is going to be doing its job. And but it's also going to get clogged, and when it gets clogged, you can't get the proper amount of airflow through the system, and then it causes the coil to freeze, and then before you know it, you've got a very warm house.
And I know no one really wants to think about this, because it is only the second week of August, and everyone's still enjoying the summer and the pools and cookouts. But you can't wait till the last minute to start thinking about your furnace.
We start about the end of August, starting to call our customers that have an agreement with us where we do their heating tune-ups. And they'll start making those calls towards the end of August. It's a very hard job for our CSRs to make those calls when it's 9,500 degrees outside, but it does need to be done. And, you know, we'll start actively calling our customers to start scheduling those calls at the end of August. And then we literally start doing furnace tune-ups in the beginning of September.
Hey, it's just funny you're talking about all this stuff. I ran into a friend yesterday at Kroger, and we were just talking about how hot it's been. And this is unrelated to home heating and air, but he's talking about his car. And you know, you get that little fan switch. Well, only the high switch works. And he's like, oh, I'm going to wait and let that thing go out before I get it fixed. I hope you don't take that approach at home, because it's been really hot. But I kind of got a kick out of that. But yeah, you're right. Our AC units, they're overburdened. It's just nonstop.
And it's not just the heat. It's the extreme humidity. This week, I mean, there were days, like, I think it was Wednesday, you walked outside at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you were, you know, if you had to walk more than 50 feet to your car, you were already sweating. So, yeah. I mean, it's
been brutal. It's just been downright brutal. But, you know, I'm glad you got Ernie straightened out on that that outside speaking. I mean, he's just been giddy all morning about it.
I am. I couldn't wait till you get here just so I could brag just a little bit.
And he's even keeping, which I never heard of such a thing, but a half a pipe wrench.
I don't know what happened.
What is up with that?
I found this half a pipe wrench, and I have no idea why I kept it, where the other half is, and what I would ever do with that half a pipe wrench.
Yeah.
Does it have, like, just the one jaw?
It just has the one jaw, and it's missing the lower part that you adjust up to it.
Yeah. No, I don't think that thing's going to do you much good.
I don't either. Not unless you're going to make it like a lapel pin out of it or something.
I mean, you might not have a hammer one day, and you could use it as a hammer, but, yeah, it's not going to be much good without that part.
No, I don't think so either.
I'm going to have to take a picture of that and post on our Facebook page. And it just, this is the kind of goopy things that happen to me, or I do, and I know my brother Cliff is just shaking his head right now. Why would I keep that? In hopes it may be fun in the other half?
Believe me, I've worked at a plumbing shop since I was a little kid. It was my grandfather's shop before mine. And my grandfather kept everything.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, when he would go on vacation, like, that was the time to start throwing stuff out. and not only that, but if he went on a golf trip, my grandmother would have me come over to their house and throw stuff out.
That's my wife's philosophy.
Yeah.
If I go somewhere,
she throws stuff out.
Yeah. Forget it.
My dad has things, I mean, paperwork, too, that go all the way back to maybe 1996, 90, and I'm like, Dad,
Yeah. What are you doing with
it? You think you might need this?
You just never know.
Really?
Yeah. We're talking with Jason from Herman Services. We need to pause for a minute. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got our friend Jason back in from Herman Services. Give us your contact information real quick before I brag again about fixing my my pipe.
All right. You can, my pipe. Here, watch how you say that.
My faucets.
Our phone number is 513-SERVICE. It spells out the word service. And you can also reach us online at hermanservices.com. And there's a form, I think it's on the right side of the screen, where you can actually request service through that website by email, and we can email you back. It gives you a place to leave a description, and please leave a phone number so that we can get in touch with you in case we have any questions.
And I know we have one of our commercials that we run for you is I've got a guy for that. Tell me a little bit about Herman Services. You guys have been around for a long time, and you cover the whole house.
We started business in 1968. It was actually my grandfather that started the business. We started as plumbing only. About in the late 90s, we picked up heating and air. And then about maybe almost 10 years now, we picked up electrical service, too. So that way we do most of our work is residential service. So it's the fixing faucets, replacing faucets, replacing water heaters, furnaces, air conditioners, and doing all sorts of different electric work. Lots and lots of ceiling fans this time of year. Our electrician seems to be working on a ceiling fan almost on a daily basis. And then we also do some small light remodel, like bathroom remodels, stuff like that. Maybe adding a bathroom to a basement and a few other jobs similar to that. We don't really get into major construction like remodeling your whole house, but doing single bathrooms, kitchens, and stuff like that we do a lot of.
Are there any tips, you know, talking about doing bathrooms and so forth? Like, I kind of have a half rough in down in my basement. Now I wish it was a full rough in, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Now, anything I would need to pay attention to or think about if I was to saw up the floor and tie things in together? Or
there's usually in a basement, you're pretty safe to do that. Mm-hmm. A shower needs to be installed properly. I mean, it's definitely somewhere.
Right.
If you were installing, adding a shower or a bathtub to the basement, you would make sure that unless you really, really knew what you were doing, you would want to make sure that you got a plumber involved. We run into it all the time where somebody did something on their own and, you know, they didn't put a trap underneath
the
shower.
Right, you need a trap, right?
So you need a trap, you need a vent. It needs to be certain distances away so you don't get sewer gases backing up. If you're doing something like that, you want to make sure that it's done right. Especially since you're breaking up concrete to do it. And you want to make sure that it's done right so it doesn't end up being a burden. It ends up being a value to you and your house and doesn't end up being a maintenance burden.
So what's
like
there?
That.
So the commode drain is there with a cap on it.
Mm-hmm.
So would you go to that? And would you have to still vent
The way it should be piped is that toilet, there should be an arm for that toilet.
Uh-huh.
So you're not necessarily breaking up the floor to that spot.
Right.
You're breaking up the floor usually back to where it's vented, and you can pull a tee off there.
Okay, gotcha.
And then pick up your shower, and then you might have to, depending on distances and stuff like that, you might have to vent that line and stuff like that. A lot of things we run into is these bathrooms that they rough into the basements, they didn't run a vent. So hopefully there's a vent down in the basement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you don't vent a group of plumbing fixtures like a bathroom, then it's never going
to
work.
Yeah, it's vented. It's right there. I might have to have you take a look at that sometime.
That's no problem. We'd love to come out.
I know that I did the half bath rough in, you know, when we built the house years ago. And whatever reason, I come in from outside. I like to just go into the basement and shower, do it instead of getting upstairs and I don't know. It seems like I get grass clippings and all kinds of stuff everywhere. And it's like, if I could just come into the basement and do that, I can eliminate all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone in that. There's, you know, we do that all the time. So there's a lot of people that have that same feeling where they like to have that more of a, the dirty bathroom or, you know,
the
whatever.
Boys' room.
Yeah,
the
boys' room.
If you had any requests, I don't think this is bizarre, but are people doing any type of outdoor showers with like enclosures around it?
Every once in a while.
Curious. I
mean, we have a couple of them out there where, yeah they do that. It's not, in different plumbing forums that I'm in and magazines and stuff.
High-end neighborhoods like where Ernie lives.
Not even so much as that, but I think it's more for areas. People do it more in areas where it's warmer.
Yeah.
In our area here, you would have to, once you did that, you would also have to design a way that you could drain that down and protect those pipes when it gets cold in the winter.
Right.
So you have a little bit of added things that you have to do to make sure that it's all going to work correctly.
Got it.
But I've seen some beautiful ones in magazines, on forums that I'm in and stuff like that. And some of them are really neat. And it's a good idea when you think about it. I'd say if I lived in a warmer climate, it would definitely be something.
Yeah, I guess it has more to do with the climate you live in, or
if you're good
geographic area, I should say.
Yeah, if you're good at things like turning off all your faucets at the season changes and stuff like that, I wouldn't shy away.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because up on my deck, not in recent years, I used to have a spigot up there, a faucet, to where I could just hook up to it and hose the deck off whenever. No matter, every year when I also have a potting bench outside, I always had running water too, and it's still there, but I don't connect it all anymore because no matter what I did to drain everything, it always seemed like the copper line, because I'm a copper person, it would always develop a little split in it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, really? Now, what's going on there? Because
the water's getting trapped in there.
Well, somehow, yeah.
So what we would do in a situation like that is where you shut off the water, probably most likely down in the basement somewhere, we wouldn't just put a valve to shut the water off. We would add a second valve where you could hook up an air compressor to it. So once you shut it off, you could hook up the air compressor and blow all the
water. That's what I did. I blew it out through the spigot because it just gravity would take it down below where I have the faucets for outside and would come right out through the faucet.
And then it would still end up,
up high. Splitting. Yeah, so, up, it was just really weird.
Somehow it was trapping water in there. So it would be something like at that point, since you've already tried that, the next step would be to have me look at it. I'm sure it would be somewhere.
Oh, no.
It.
I was like, all you got to do is this. This is all it is. Yeah, Ernie can fix it. Yeah, Tony, you should have called Ernie. Ernie can fix that.
Get Ernie over there with his pipe wrench and we'll be all right.
And bring my pipe wrench over. I got that fixed for you.
Killing me. Killing me, Smalls.
Yeah. As you'd say. Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We got our friend Jason from Herman Services in with us. We need to pause for a moment and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Jason from Herman Services in with us. And again, we're talking a lot about home repair and air conditioner. And Tony's got some issues I need to stop over with my pipe wrench and take a look at.
I don't think so.
And after I make it
you'll
work,
you'll bring out half the wrench over.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I just thought I could use that.
Do a half a job. You do a half a job with a half a wrench.
I have to put that as decoration out on my shed.
No. You know what, though? I enjoy plumbing. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I like the solder things, and I'm one of those individuals that probably use too much solder.
Are you
really good? Like, you just do a dab of do you kind of when you're soldering and it gets in there?
I mean, I try to be where I want it to look good, not just not leak, but look really good.
Right, it's got to look good. You got to have a nice wipe on it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I definitely don't want somebody else coming after me, though.
Exactly. That's important, you know? It's a nice, clean job. It looks good around the joint.
Did you solder that piece that's leaking?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've cut it out. No. Well, I've cut it out several times. Yeah. No, I don't have any problem soldering. Yeah. I can handle that.
And I've always liked, I think I was learned when I was a small child, and I've always enjoyed the plumbing industry. It's actually a really rewarding job being able to solve some of these problems, because you get into some things where it's just, it takes forever to figure out what's going on, and we get all these new things coming into our industry and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's really rewarding to be able to figure out people's problems and help people out, bring a smile to people's faces when you're able to solve their problems.
Well, I'm going to tell you a problem. I'm going to give you a scenario of a problem that I had when I had a two-family rental piece way up in the wall, the old cast iron drains.
Mm-hmm.
Daggone thing had a split in it, you know, and it's just enough. It's like, you got to be kidding me. You know, this thing's way up in the wall, you know, and so I moved some things around. And I don't know what your approach would be to fix something of the sort. All I did which used that two-part marine epoxy, and she was golden. So you talk about you talk about fixing a problem and feeling good about it. It was like, do I tear this thing out or what?
Yeah.
You know, for a homeowner who's having that kind of an issue, because that's pretty common, is it not?
It's really, really common.
So how do you go about, you know, redoing something of the sort or fixing that, or you really got to tear into it?
It's a lot of communication with the customer to start out with.
Yeah.
We generally don't use an epoxy or anything.
Are you calling me out? Because it worked. Yeah. I don't own that house anymore, but it worked. Yeah.
Like sometimes, sometimes yes, that will work, but it's generally a temporary repair.
It's a patch.
So in the most cases, we're going to replace that pipe and, we're going to replace that pipe with a PVC pipe. But there's a lot of communication involved with the customer, because you get into tearing out a ceiling or tearing out a wall.
Sure.
You know, it might be a bathroom. A lot of times we'll run into the might as wells. You know, you've gone this far.
Might as well
go a little bit. No,
that's another $1,200. Yeah. You might as well do it.
But you don't, you know, you want to give the customer that option because, you know, you don't want to have all this stuff torn out and then put a wall back. And then it's like, well, if we just would have went one step farther, you know, a year from now, you're tearing that same wall out that we just did. So it's a lot of trying to give the customer options, and just communicating with them. Like, this is what needs to happen to fix this in particular leak. And then once we get these walls open, there's things that we could run into. You want to go this far? Do you want to go this far? And I've had those lead into, you know, that small leak in that cracked pipe. And the next thing you know, we're putting a whole new bathroom in. But just talking to the customer, they wanted a new bathroom anyways. But, you know, giving them options and the different scenarios and being able to fix it and making it a more of a permanent fix where it's going to be a lifelong repair.
Are there certain no-nos, so to speak, when you're trying to piece some things together? You can go out and buy those rubber sleeves with the bands, the metal bands.
A lot of those are actually approved, and we will use different ones of those. We know from experience which ones work better and last longer.
Will you share that with us? is that an ancient Chinese secret?
Yeah, we use like a pro, I think it's called pro flex bands.
Yeah.
Some different bands. Some are code approved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain ones like the ones with just the rubber and the gear clamps. Those aren't necessarily code approved to use above ground. There's certain cases where we don't have any other choice. That's what we got to use. But it depends, and there's different fittings that you wouldn't normally have at a home improvement store, where we can get a particular fitting at a regular plumbing supply house to take care of that stuff. But some of the biggest no-nos are, you know, if you're, you know, like PVC pipe does not glue or silicone in any way to a cast iron pipe. There needs to be some kind of mechanical fitting to hold them together. You know, and then any kind of sketchy, like if you feel like you're doing something weird when you're doing it, definitely don't do that behind a wall where you're going to be putting drywall on there, or anything else. If you do something like that and say it gets a very small leak or drip, and then, you bury that back into a wall, then you're going to end up with mold and mildew building up inside that wall. And then once that mold and mildew builds up, that could be connected to a return air to your heating and air conditioning system. And the next thing you know, you're sucking that mold and mildew back into your heating and cooling system and then dispersing it throughout the house. So you're going to create, you know, you might create, respiratory issues, with somebody in the house or something like that. So it's really important that everything is sealed and sealed correctly. Especially stuff that's buried behind.
You know, my hat is off to you guys when you're doing plumbing work, because it seems like everything's in the most obscure, unreachable place ever in life. I mean, it's like you're on your back, you're underneath that kitchen sink, and it's like, are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
You need that special tool that you don't have. I can't get in there. So you have to be a fit fella, right? They get in there.
You'd be amazed. You can. I'm a pretty big guy, and I can get into some pretty small cabinets. I actually replaced a kitchen faucet last weekend, and that had to be the smallest kitchen sink cabinet I was ever in my life. And it was one where you just had to, I had to replace the whole entire faucet with one hand. And luckily I do have the proper tools to be able to do that. But there was no way in the world that somebody would be able to change that faucet on their own without, you know, destroying the cabinet and all the other plumbing that was underneath it.
Yeah, interesting. So. I plumbing's fascinating. I just like it. Just it always seems like it can be an issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of plumbing and a couple of other things that have been issues, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about water heaters. When you were here last, there were some of them discontinued, and we'll cover that. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Jason from Herman Services in with us. And Jason, last time you were here with us, you were talking about how some new regulations and restrictions had been put into place, and large hot water tanks were a thing of the past. But now you have good news.
Yeah, there was a new regulation, and they eliminated a lot of the tanks that are over 50 gallons in size.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that have water heaters that are over 50 gallons in size. With gas water heaters, it wasn't the end of the world because we have tankless to deal with or to compensate with and some other things. But on the electric side, there's not really an electric tankless water heater that works like a gas tankless water heater. So our biggest, one of the most popular water heaters out there is an 80-gallon electric water heater, and mm-hmm. They were eliminating 80-gallon electric water heaters altogether. So we were really limited in the options at first, and we have found an option. It's a stainless steel tank-type water heater. It's 80 gallons. It works just like a regular 80-gallon water heater that somebody might already have in their house. But it's stainless steel. It carries a longer warranty. I want to say that it's a 20-year warranty on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a stainless steel tank, so it should last even longer than that. But there is an option out there. It's quite a bit more expensive than the old tank type 80-gallon water heaters,
mm-hmm.
but it's at least a solution. I mean, when you get in like now, kids are getting ready to go back to school. You know, when you get back into the scenario that everybody's showering in the morning before school and people run out of hot water and, you know, you might not have space to put in 250s or some other scenario,
mm-hmm.
This 80-gallon electric that we found would work really good for those people.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head when we were in the break. You said, yeah, everyone is back in school, so that means 5-6 people in the house are showering every morning, getting ready for school or at night.
Mm-hmm.
And the smaller tanks just aren't holding up.
Yeah, I mean, anytime that you have tank type water heaters, that's your killer is shower after shower after shower.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they struggle to keep up, and especially with electric, because you're working on electric elements, and it takes them quite a while to regenerate a full tank of hot water again. Mm-hmm. So the solution to that is to have a larger storage tank. And like I said, that's what they went after in the regulations was the larger storage tank. So, you know, for a while we were really stuck. We didn't have any really good solutions for somebody with an 80-gallon electric that had a need for it. And luckily we found something that'll work really well in those cases. Unfortunately, it's a little more costly than what the old ones were, mm-hmm. but at least it's a solution.
And the steel, stainless steel, it's going to last quite a bit longer.
And we haven't had them that long, so, you know, in my general knowledge and everything I've dealt with stainless steel in the past, yes, those tanks should last a very long time. But we haven't had them for 20 years, so right. I can't really tell you if this thing's going to last 20 years, but I know it should.
Right.
So.
And something that we touched on again last time, I think it's important to bring this back up. There is some maintenance to your hot water heater that a lot of people just forget about until it's an issue.
Oh, yeah. The biggest complaint we get about water heaters is they make a grumbling noise. I'm sure there's a lot of people that know exactly what I'm talking about. And basically that grumbling noise is calcium and stuff building up on the bottom of the water heater. It traps water below that sediment. That sediment ends up boiling because the water is trapped in there. And then that grumbling sound you're hearing is the boiling bubbles mixing up that calcium. And really, the best way to prevent it is to just every year drain 5-10 gallons of water off through that drain valve at the bottom of your water heater, either into a bucket or stick a hose right into a floor drain and let it run for 5 or 6 minutes. Full open, and that'll get so much sediment out of the water heater, it'll prevent that problem from happening.
And how often should you do that?
You should do that once a year. If you do that once a year, and then if you check or replace your safety device, which is the relief valve on the top, it's got a little lever that you open on it. If you drain it, do that relief valve once a year, and then there's also an anode rod inside of a water heater. If you replace that, you can make a water heater last indefinitely. There's not a lot of people that do those things, though.
Right.
The easiest one, and probably the easiest and most beneficial for your time and money, is to just drain some water off the bottom of that heater once a year, and that'll increase the life of your water heater, and it'll stop that sediment buildup, which will make your water heater more efficient in the long run.
And that's pretty easy to do. You just get a little garden hose or small hose?
Yeah, if you get a small garden hose, an old washing machine hose from replacing your washing machine hoses, and put that on there. You could run it into a floor drain. You could run it into a 5-gallon bucket. Usually most water heaters now have a screwdriver stop type drain valve in the bottom. The key is you open it all the way.
Yeah.
Because you want any solids in there to be able to pass through. So if you only open it a little bit, it'll keep all the solids trapped in there and you're just draining off water. But you want to be able to open it all the way. Like I said, you could fill up a 5-gallon bucket or you could run it straight into a floor drain.
That's great advice. Give us your contact information again.
Our phone number is 513-SERVICE. That's 737-8423. And you can also reach us on our website, which is hermanservices.com. It always has two R's and two N's. And there's a place on there that you can request service online.
Thank you so much for coming in and joining us again. We've always learned so much when you come by. Anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
One last thing. We're doing our Pink Ribbon Girls campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We raise every October. We do a sign campaign where if you volunteer to host a sign in your front yard, we donate $10 and $10 for every sign to the Pink Ribbon Girls. We try to get 300 signs out there in people's yards. It's great for the Pink Ribbon Girls, and then anybody that does it, you also get a gift certificate or a coupon for us. So it gets information out there. The Pink Ribbon Girls are a great organization to work with,
mm-hmm.
and it makes us, it's nice for us because we get to do something nice for a really good group.
Fantastic. And is that information available on your website?
You can find the Pink Ribbon Girls on our Facebook page or their information on our Facebook page or our website right now.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming in.
No problem.
Always a pleasure having you here. And I can't wait to brag next time you come back about whatever my newest conquest.
It'll be a half of something.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make it a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.